Yo everyone, welcome back to Brand New Techish. I'm Michael Behane and I'm joined with the amazing
Abadesi Osunsade of Hustle Crew.
Well, let's get it cracking.
Shout out to Google for Startups for hosting us in their lovely creator studio here in East London today. If you
Radio are voice.
In tech and making podcasts, then make sure you hit them up, Google for Startups.
So there was, I saw another tweet. So somebody, this is why you got to be on Twitter. There's so many interesting conversations and things that make me like think. It gives me so much food for thought.
This is my Reddit.
Yeah, this is our Reddit, basically. So anyway, so somebody said, when I worked at Amazon from 1999 to 2006, Jeff Bezos' favorite interview question was, are you a lucky person? And it was a way to filter for optimists and people who manifest success.
Wow.
Now, I was so conflicted when I saw that because I was like, yo, that's so harsh. Because if I spoke to people that I know, some of them would be like, no, I'm not a lucky person. My mom's ill, you know, grew up in a single parent household. I grew up in quote unquote the hood. Like, so I guess I'm not a lucky person, right? So I wouldn't blame them for saying they're not a lucky person. But at the same time, I think it is a good heuristic because you do filter for people that are pessimists. A pessimistic person would say, I'm not a lucky... Talk to me, what do you think? Like,
just because someone has adversity in their life doesn't mean they don't consider themselves lucky, right?
Yeah, right.
If anything, in that example, someone could be like, and despite all that, I've still been able to achieve right. X, Y, yeah. Z, so actually yeah. I think I am lucky.
Yeah, and I think the why it works is because the person who views themselves as lucky, even if they don't, their circumstances are not great, will end up seeing opportunities and the upside in things. And so much about how success is your mindset, and so much about success is also just like, yo,
the
like,
difference between a good day and a bad day is perspective.
Yeah, I mean, there are some objectively bad days, but yeah, I can remember a few of them, but like, yeah, I know what you mean. So if someone asked that to you, what would you have said? Would you have been like...
I'd be like, I'm the luckiest girl in the
Look
world.
At me.
She's so lucky.
I'm friends with Michael. I'm the luckiest girl.
It's actually a really interesting thing because I have a lot of conversations with myself. I have for like a... Honestly, since I was a little kid, I used to spend a lot of time alone. So hung out with myself.
Loner.
And I often have conversations about how blessed I am and how lucky I am. And I am thankful every day to God, the universe, the world, whatever, because, you know, even though we're all individuals listening from different places and different countries, each of us know strife, you know, each of us know challenges, each of us know hardship. And my brain and my being is one that reflects on times of hardship with a deep sense of gratitude that I could survive and you know, live to tell the tale. Like, just as an example, I was thinking about how this time last year I was in San Francisco, like launching Alpha, working with a new team, and things were like so intense in my life. And I was just like,
I remember.
You know, I would love to be back in London with my friends, with my family. I'd like to be back running Hustle Crew independently and thinking of all those things. And there was a moment when I thought it couldn't happen. And then, you know, thank God it all did and it all worked out. And for all of those reasons, I always just think, wow, I am lucky. Because there's a time when I'm like, how am I going to get through this? And then a few weeks or months later, I got through it. And I'm like, hallelujah.
Yeah.
So I feel like I am lucky. And I think related to this is the point you made. Positive people create good things.
Yeah.
Because they just see good things. And also positive people look for the good in people. And I don't mean that in like a naive way, because of course we have to trust our intuition. And of course, you know, I love that Maya Angelou quote, when people show you who they are,
believe them. Yep.
Right? I am a big believer in that. But at the same time, if you walk into every scenario in a negative way, you're not even fun to work with.
Yeah, that's real talk. And I had to unfollow a whole bunch of people on Twitter that I really admired and are really super smart, but they kept just tweeting about the what's wrong in the world and what's like, you know, systemic oppression. And I got love for that because part of my work is that, you know what I'm saying? And it's important to highlight, but it was too much because I was like, let me follow some people. Let me try and experiment and follow people that are talking about what they're doing proactively. You know what I'm saying? Whether that's within social justice work or whether that's even just within entrepreneurship. And I felt a bit happier. I'm not going to lie. I felt more positive. I felt like, all right, cool. We can do this kind of thing. And that's something to be mindful of, your influences and what you're taking in.
The other thing I'll say, though, the only challenging thing about this point about being lucky is we're living in a time where many people identify with imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Like particularly people in competitive industries like ours, particularly people who are entrepreneurs. And it's also important to often remind ourselves that luck is just one part of success.
100%, yeah.
Because to be lucky, you need to create opportunities where luck can come to you, right? And if you're not doing that work, then you can't be lucky. Do you see what I mean? Like often when we think of luck, we just think of it being completely accidental
and
random. But actually, I think lucky people are also people that are working and operating in such a way that lucky things can happen to them.
Yeah, I think there is value in reading books like, you know, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and yada yada, because there is a modicum of truth that positive mindset is powerful. Obviously, these books are very politically naive, like they're very middle class centric in the sense of like, if you just work hard, you can do it. And it's like, guys, listen.
Sure, Brad.
Yeah, like it's not that easy, right? There's barriers and I don't want to downplay the barriers that people have in their lives, right? But is it better to have a positive mindset? Yeah, that's all I can say. Like that is, you know, that's facts.
Yeah, and I there's a lot of research out there that I have read around neuroplasticity, around, you know, the neurons that fire in our brain, certain patterns of thought, certain patterns of thinking. It is definitely possible to go from feeling like you're not a lucky person to feeling like you are a lucky person if you are willing to do the work and invest in yourself. And whether it's therapy, coaching or whatever, that journey is possible.
If you're looking for a new start, check out Pocket Jobs. That's POCITJOBS.com, pocketjobs.com. It's a career platform for people of color in the tech industry looking to level up. It's used by tons of startups, nonprofits, and large tech companies looking to find amazing candidates of color for the tech roles. Link in the show notes.
So there's a, I don't know where the data is from, but actually, so people looking at young people and their behavior. This is US ninth grade, so 14 to 15 year olds. Mm-hmm. There's been a massive decline in people that have ever drank alcohol, people that have ever tried cigarettes, people that have ever had sex at that age, people that have ever used marijuana, people that watch 3 hours plus of TV. But there is a massive increase in the number of people that play video games at least 3+ hours a day. So for some people are like, Fortnite is now the anti-weed, anti-sex, anti-TV, anti-alcohol, anti-smoker solutions parents have been seeking for decades. So is this a positive or a negative? I know most of those behaviors are pretty much a negative, like cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana. But I'm worried that it's actually telling of something else, which is that we're now raising more people that are more risk adverse, that have less real world experience, that are more prone to just like staying indoors. But I guess watching TV is staying indoors. I don't know. What do you think?
I think what we're seeing is a correlation between government efforts to change behaviors.
Right.
And we're seeing the result of that. If I think of countries like the UK, Australia, even in America, there's been heavy, heavy restrictions against advertising tobacco over the last few years. And there's also a conversation to be had around toxic masculinity and like certain
behaviors
that are driven by a hyper masculine way of being that comes from patriarchy. You know, the Marlboro man was literally like, bro, on a friggin' horse with a cowboy hat, chain smoking Marlboro Reds. So I think we're, you know, we have more information now than we did before. And they are a digital first generation. So they have grown up with a connotation that cigarettes are bad, alcohol makes you do stupid things, sex is kind of scary, actually, because a lot of them are discovering sex through pornography, and that's like a whole nother kettle of fish. Like, there's like a lot of young men who are reporting erectile dysfunction and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, I actually think it's a positive thing. Like, we always have to remember that we're always analyzing the younger generation with an outdated framework, because
we
are no longer young. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just because they're doing less of the stuff we did and spending more time playing video games doesn't mean we're creating risk-averse hermits. If anything, maybe we're just creating like more self-aware, higher consciousness individuals that want to live forever.
I think that is like the positive interpretation. I don't doubt that. I don't know what's true.
I want to hear from you. Are you young?
If you're Gen Z, in the 14 to 15, I hope you haven't got any 14-year-olds listening, because I swear quite a lot. But
it's nothing they haven't heard before.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. I'm not convinced that it's necessarily the positive sign that you think it is. I mean, as a parent, if I was a parent, I would be pleased that my child, more times than not, is not going to be, you know, partaking in most of these activities. But I don't think anything is 100% positive. And I think everything's a trade-off. And I think there are trade-offs where I think people who are growing up now at this young age probably are a bit more fragile, probably are less risk prone. I don't know. I've seen it.
Every generation thinks that the generation after them is more delicate. Why? Why is that?
There is an element of truth to that, in a sense. I remember being in school and my teacher was saying to me like, oh, like our generation, like we knew how to kind of survive in the woods. Like, and her parents were better than that. Absolutely, right, absolutely. But like, if you put me in the woods, I'll be baffed. And if you put my children in the woods, they're going to even be more even lost. Like, I don't know.
The threat to human life in the 21st century goes way beyond a bear in the woods right now.
Yeah, that's
true. We are talking about digital life, social media, mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people struggling with their own identity, being bullied, being excluded, committing suicide.
Yeah.
The world is not necessarily safer now than it was before, just because there's high-speed internet and kids don't have to learn how to start a fire with two sticks. They're dealing with their own unique threats to their lives.
That's a bad example. I'll take that back. But so you've worked with young people.
Yes.
Are you telling me you haven't seen a decline in like social acuity? I have seen it. Like, I've looked at, they can't even look you in the eye. They can't. A lot of them can't. I'm keeping it real.
You can't look me in the eye.
This is massive generalization. Obviously, not every child is like this, 14 to 15. But I've just seen a decline. I just don't remember. Anyways, I'm sounding like the old fogey now, innit?
You are.
I'm the old fogey. Hashtag Tekich. Am I completely wrong?
The young people I meet are incredibly impressive. They're incredibly impressive. They astound me. They're interested in stuff. They're curious about stuff. They are less ashamed about things than I was. I feel that every generation there's higher consciousness, and you know, we can't compete with that. We can't even think like that, and we have to be very mindful of that.
I do agree with you. Every generation there is a higher consciousness, in the sense that if I look at like the tone and energy of my father, and then probably comparing that to his father, each generation has got more comfortable with like their emotions. Not even just that, but even with like, we're more comfortable with, like, I'm probably much more comfortable with my emotions than my dad was, and he's probably much more comfortable with his emotions than his dad was, right? Mm. And that's a good thing, and I'm sure the previous next generation is even better. So Bob Iger stepped down from Disney after quite an amazing run. Like, just give the backstory. Under his watch, they bought Star Wars, they bought Pixar, they bought Marvel. They've now created some of the biggest box office films of all time.
Baby Yoda.
They started Disney Plus. Whereas before, they were in quite a precarious position where Netflix seemed like they were the disruptor, and all these other old school media companies were kind of done out here,
yeah,
or at least on the verge of being done out here. So they've now created Disney Plus. They've got Netflix on the back foot. They went and done a lot of the live action. So they went back into their back catalog and they did live action Aladdin, live action Beauty and the Beast. Some of it hit and miss, but a lot of it is
Mulan
made.
Mulan coming up,
right?
Mulan.
So this is all under Bob Iger's watch, and now he stepped down.
Bobby, where are you going?
Yeah, I think he's going to work more under the creative side of the company now.
So he's still there.
Yeah, he's still there, but not CEO anymore. But what I would say is, to me, the lesson of it is that M&A, mergers and acquisition, is like so important, especially for these kind of like existing companies. Like, you're not going to be able to innovate in-house once you're a big giant company with, you know, billions of dollars and thousands of employees. You're better off just acquiring it and bringing it in-house. And he probably might have to go down as like one of the best M&A guys I've seen for a long time, because he bought Marvel, Star Wars, and Pixar.
Yeah.
Yo, they got the whole wheel. And Fox now. They bought Fox as well.
That's true.
So shout out to him. Like,
benefited from timing as well.
Yeah. In what sense? What do you mean?
Well, I just feel that there are certain periods of time when those production companies made huge bets that didn't pay off.
Right, yeah.
So they were like financially vulnerable more open to, you know, basically being acquired.
Yeah, and you got to realize, so Instagram got sold for $1 billion. Star Wars, the entire intellectual property of Star Wars went for $4 billion. They probably made that back within a couple of years. Each Star Wars movie has done about $2 billion, let alone the toys, the merch, the IP, the TV series. Like, it's the Lego partnership. It's a cash cow. Like, so I aspire to that kind of level of M&A one day, God willing. But like, I think we just have to be honest. Like, once you've reached, like, even Facebook, for example, they had to acquire all of their innovation.
But why do you think that is? Because that's the more interesting question. Not just the fact that it is the case, but why it is the case. Because that's where the learning comes from for entrepreneurs as they're thinking of their businesses, or even managers within these big corporates. What is it that happens after a certain period of time or amount of scale where you just can't do that anymore?
So I think it has to do with the size of the team. I think there's a reason why, like, military units are very small. But I think once you increase what's the Dunbar's number, I think it is?
So 120?
150. So Dunbar's number was a scientist. He basically postulated that humans could only really have 150 close social friends.
Yes.
And then once that number scales up, it's impossible to maintain the network. Because you'd imagine, like, so Abadesi knows me. I know Abadesi's partner. Abadesi's partner knows me and he knows my partner. For example, like, there's so many permutations that once you get past to 150, it's impossible for everyone to kind of keep track of who's who and understand each other. And I think innovation thrives in smaller groups. It just does. And once you get bigger, there's bureaucracy, there's politics.
It's the agility.
Yeah, there's no agility, there's bureaucracy. It becomes, there's a lot of people that are now just like the company person. They're just there
middle
because
management.
Of their middle management. You get a lot of like, you know, sign it off. No, we can't do that.
Process just kills it.
And
kills
also there's a natural, I think it's called the innovator's dilemma, which is that sometimes to get to where you need to go next, you have to destroy what you're doing now. Right, and that's very difficult. You don't want to cannibalize your existing business, so that's why sometimes you need a smaller company that has no existing infrastructure that can be like, well, we don't mind cannibalizing your business because we've got nothing. So, and that's the opportunities for startups. That's why startups exist. Either a big company will get taken out by a small startup, and they themselves will become the big company, or the big company will say, listen, we need to bring this in-house because we can't innovate to that level.
If you could acquire any company to right grow now. Your company.
Woo! Now we're
or
talking.
Help you expand into new verticals, whatever.
Oh, you've put me on a new spot, you know. That's amazing. That's a very good question. I haven't got an answer of any real intelligence because I've never really thought about it. To be honest though, there was a company that has recently shut down. I'm not going to name it. And they were doing something similar. It was to do with D&I.
Diversity inclusion.
Yeah, diversity and inclusion. And they shut down for whatever reason. I think they raised a couple million and it didn't work out for them. Shout out to them. And I was seriously interested in going up to them and saying, can I buy what you guys have done? Because just because you haven't been able to make it work, because you know, you're not going to give your VCs the optimal return. Maybe there's something there that I can use for my existing customer base. And I guess I'm now at the level where I'm thinking in that kind of, those kind of chess moves, essentially, right?
Smart.
But I'm such a bootstrap founder and I'm such a still at a small stage of a company, I'm not even thinking about who would I acquire, right? So I'm very much more used to thinking about, if I was Facebook, who would I acquire? If I was this company, who would I acquire, right?
Or who would you like to be acquired by?
Or who would I like to be acquired by? That's a whole other conversation. I can't say that.
Check out Abadesi's Hustle Crew. Hustle Crew is on a mission to make the tech industry more productive and inclusive through talks, training, and mentorship. Link in the show notes.
Well, the next topic I want to talk about, I saw a funny ass tweet, another tweet. Someone says, I'm applying. So when you're applying for your MBA, you say, I'm going to build microfinance for orphans in Kenya. During your MBA, you say, I'm going to build a curated travel experience for millennials. After your MBA, I'm a product manager at Facebook. So essentially, it's basically breaking down the steps of being a sellout. No, I'm joking. It's basically breaking down the steps of when you reality hits and you're like, you know what? I want to do this thing. It sounds cool. Then you're like, I got these bills and I got these student loans. So then afterwards, you're literally just like, I'm just going to take the most economically safe job possible. What does it say to you though? Because there isn't a complete modicum of truth here. I've looked around and I've known so many people that were going to change the world, they were going to save the world, and now they're at Goldman Sachs. Like, you
can't
really.
Why you need to do an MBA to build microfinance for orphans in Kenya? But yeah, I mean, I totally get this. I went to LSE.
Yeah.
And
talk about it.
In the economics program, everyone was like, myself included, like, oh, I'm going to work in macroeconomic development.
Yeah.
I'm going to help emerging economies, you know, achieve hypergrowth and mature and all this kind of stuff. I mean, in my case, the recession happened and I was like, oh, shit.
I got to pay these bills.
Yeah. And I also think it's like a lack of understanding, not only of the ecosystem that we're operating in, but also in terms of like what of our own skills we want to leverage.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, you know, it's that challenging balancing act of, what are the opportunities out there where I can apply my skills?
You know,
what are the opportunities where my skills are valued at a price I'm happy with? And then also, like, you know, where it aligns with my values. And I think when we're really young, before we are beaten up by the cold, hard reality of capitalism, we are very idyllic and we're very values-driven because we aren't really fending for ourselves. Yeah. We're kind of still kids. We live at home, if we're lucky, or whatever, some kind of care, some kind of pastoral system. Even university is a bit like...
It's a fake
still
world.
Babied,
yeah,
right?
Still, you're still babied.
And then boom, rent,
yep,
debt,
landlord,
bills,
yep,
whatever. And then it's like, oh, snap. And unfortunately, capitalism doesn't really like optimize for impact-driven jobs, right?
It doesn't.
The highest paid people in the world actually are the ones that are kind of screwing the economy over.
Yeah, honestly. Literally. It reminds me of a quote from Nassim Taleb. He basically said, you're successful if you can look in the mirror
and not
offend the person who you once were at 18. So if your 18-year-old self would look at you now, how would they look at you? Would they say, okay, you know what? This person is kind of, you know, what I aspire to be, what I wanted to be. And he says 18 because that's just before you let life corrupt you.
Mm.
That's just before you're like, you know what? I want to have an impact, but I prefer fine dining with my friends. I don't want to be the one left out, right? Or when I look at Instagram, I want to be there in Mexico too, you know, turning up and whatnot. So it's hard. And I think that is a good benchmark for success. And I try my best to kind of live up to that. I think my 18-year-old self would be like, you kind of compromised it.
Yeah.
You're not as, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I still would have an element of being like, no, you did all right.
Yeah.
Because compared to what I could have been, like I went to UCL and for my master's and everyone around me was like just clamoring to get into banking.
Mm.
Like clamoring. And they looked at me like I was insane when I was like, I want to be an entrepreneur or try, at least try. They're like, what? Are you dumb? Even being in a even trying to be a junior engineer at a startup, they were like, but fam, look at the salaries. Like, are you, what's that going to get you compared to Goldman Sachs or JP? Like,
we're back to cash versus culture.
Exactly, right? But that's, yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's not necessarily, it wasn't even a culture thing. I saw startups as a kind of an education to becoming my own business person, essentially, right? So that was my part.
That's valuing flexibility over maximizing your earnings.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Whereas they're happy to sacrifice flexibility in order to maximize
earnings. For economic security. Economic security. You can't even get mad at it. I mean, like you said, once you start getting the landlord knocking on your door, you're like, yo, fam, this ain't, saving the world ain't what it's crept up to be.
One thing I'm thinking of, though, is whether sellout is a trope, like a harmful trope. Because in some ways, systems of oppression succeed by making you feel like they're not systems of oppression.
Right.
They succeed by making you feel like it's just the natural order of things. It's the way it's always been. And, you know, capitalism oppresses people that don't have capital. If you say sellout, right, it's almost like you are criticizing someone for trying to succeed within the rigidity of capitalism.
Yeah, you know what? I put sellout in the show notes just to spark a conversation. But
I've heard people say that.
Yeah,
I think we do say that kind of stuff.
We do say. I mean, to me, a sellout is somebody who is offending their spirit every day. So what I mean by that is, if you wanted to work if you wanted to be a product manager at Facebook, and you're a product manager at Facebook, God bless you, you're happy with that. I'm not saying the role per se means you're a sellout, but if you're somebody who had other aspirations and you actually think, oh, you know what, this company's not doing the best thing for the world, and you're there every day doing something that you don't necessarily believe in just for the cash, for the check, then, you know, maybe you'd have to kind of, you know, look a bit harder in the mirror, right? Like, I know people that, you know, make a lot less than, you know, the product manager at Facebook, but they skip to work because they're like, listen, like, I enjoy what I do and I know that I'm doing something that I can be proud of, like, right? But it's difficult.
I love that.
I'm not calling any techish listeners a sellout. If you work at Facebook or any of these companies, God bless you, do your thing, man.
I want to be a sellout. If being a sellout is how I get rich.
Yeah, for real.
Ride on a yacht with Rihanna. Sell me out. So, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another episode of Techish. You know what to do. Use the hashtag Techish to jump into the conversation on Twitter. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/techish, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.